So hi, like she said, I'm Lisa Pratt, and I am in private practice, and I do research on the side, kind of like how other people would have hobbies. So access to vaginal birth after cesarean, or VBAC, is a glaring example of the breakdown between what should be available to women and for birth options and what is available in practice. The American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists and the National Institute of Health both have published statements and agree that VBAC is a safe option and that it should be offered to women. But despite those endorsements from both of the organizations, VBAC remains a limited option, both in the hospital and outside of the hospital. Hospitals with policies prohibiting VBAC have been documented, but what happens to the women who are not able to deliver at a hospital because of their prohibitive policies against VBAC? What are those women, the options for those women? Some would suggest having a home birth or giving birth in a birth center, but further research shows that those options for women who have had a prior cesarean are also often very limited. And this is particularly problematic because when you consider that out of the approximately 4 million births that we have every year, 32%, almost one-third of them end in cesarean sections. And so those women after that cesarean section are going to have difficulties being able to access vaginal birth after cesarean. And low-income women and African-American women happen to have higher than average cesarean rates, and so they have the potential to be even more greatly impacted by these policies. How do I change this? Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to go over my little roadmap here. This is my outline, basically. So I'm going to go over the methodology of this. This is what we did was a state-by-state report card, basically, on access to vaginal birth after cesarean. So I'm going to go over our methodology in general, and then I'm going to go through it for each location, for hospitals, home births, and then birth centers, because the way that we looked at it was different for each location, and it's a little confusing, so I want to be sure to break it down carefully. And then I also want to talk about the limitations in the data that we were looking at. And then finally, the findings and conclusions and recommendations. So basically, like I said, it was a state-by-state report card, and what we did was we gave scores for each state. For each state, based on three criteria, they got a score for their hospital, score for home birth, and score for birth centers. And I'll go over, again, how those scores are calculated when I go over each one of them. And then we took a final score for all of them and gave each state a final grade. The totals for, oh, that's what I just said. All right. So in hospitals, there are no laws that prohibit VBAC in hospitals. VBAC is based on policies in hospitals, which come from two things. Some of them come from hospitals that have policies that the hospital has created, an administrative policy, and they require the doctors at the hospital to follow it. The other way that it comes about is from the hospital not having a policy, but all of the doctors at that hospital, their practice is that they don't do or offer VBAC. And so effectively, there is a ban or a prohibition on VBAC at that hospital. And it's also referred to as a de facto ban. And that's used in a later slide. That's why I'm mentioning that phrase to you. So the source of this data came from a telephone survey that was done by the International Cesarean Awareness Network. They surveyed 2,875 hospitals. Of those, 1,645 allowed VBAC. 824 had an outright ban on it, or an administrative hospital policy ban, and 388 had the doctor policy or the de facto ban, for a total of 1,212 hospitals that don't allow VBAC. So almost 50% of the hospitals that offer maternity services will not allow women to have a VBAC. Now, the limitations on this data, it can be a little bit misleading, because don't assume that because a hospital does allow VBAC, that means that it's VBAC friendly. The questions in their survey don't ask things like, is there a policy that actually encourages VBAC, or are there providers there that encourage VBAC? And it doesn't. If there's one doctor at that hospital that would offer VBAC, then it would still be counted as a hospital that offers it, even though you would have to have You keep moving, and I keep thinking, like, my time's out.
Plenty of time. I'm agreeing.
So even if there was only one doctor, and the other thing, too, is something that I hear about anecdotally is that some have very strict criteria. They'll tell women, if you go into spontaneous labor by 39 weeks, then you can have a VBAC. So those kinds of things aren't really an environment that supports VBAC, but we're limited by the data that we have. And so what they surveyed was the actual policies and the prohibitions, but I don't want you to mistake it for meaning that that the other half are actually VBAC friendly.
And I just want to say, we do have seats in the front if you want to come forward. We hate to see you standing in the back.
And so more research probably needs to be done into those policies and actually finding if there's any that are supportive of VBAC. So the grades for this were calculated by finding from the survey that ICANN did was from calculating the percentage of hospitals where VBAC is available. So by state. And so states that had 0 to 10% of their hospitals that prohibited VBAC, they got an A. Hospitals that had only 11 to 20% of their hospitals, they got a B. Hold on, I have another one. Oh, okay. So this is the image where it's showing the allowed versus the banned one. I'm sorry, I should have showed that one earlier because this is where I'm at now, is on the grades. And so if they have 21 to 30% that had a ban, they got a C, and if it was a 31 to 40%, they got a D, and if it was greater than 41%, they got an F. So out of that, there were 28 states that scored an F. One of the things I'm doing hospitals. Okay, so one of the things that I want to mention, too, is, I wrote that in the wrong spot. Never mind, I'll mention that in a minute. Okay, so that's how we calculated the hospital grades. Okay, so this is home birth. And home birth was a little bit more complicated because when we looked at the way that we were doing the research is that we were focusing on sort of like facility level data. But in home birth, of course, the facility is an individual woman's home. But since we weren't looking at the individual provider level, what we did for home birth was we looked at state laws that license non-nurse midwives. And the reason that we selected non-nurse midwives is because, according to the CDC, 73% of home births are attended by non-nurse midwives. Only 13% are by certified nurse midwives, 7.6 are by physicians, and the other ones are by, you know, other people, family members, the mailman, I don't know, whoever. Sure. 73 are attended by non-nurse midwives, and that's including several types of midwives. Lay, direct entry, and certified professional midwives. The CDC's report actually broke it down into two separate categories. I lumped them all together as non-nurse midwives because different states call them different things. 7.6 was by physicians, and 13% was by certified nurse midwives. Okay, so some states do not license non-nurse midwives. And I did not give those states a score for home birth because I'm looking at laws that impact VBAC, and the states that don't have laws, there's not enough data to determine it from looking at the laws. I would have to survey individual providers and find out what their policies are. And again, that was beyond the scope of what we were looking at. We were just trying to look at facility level data. So the DNL up there, that was my abbreviation for does not license. So sorry, that's kind of confusing. Okay, so the source of my data on this, like I said, was the state laws and regulations that prohibit VBAC. Okay, so one of the issues that comes up in looking at the laws, both for home birth and for birth center births, is that sometimes they use the phrase low risk and they don't define it. And so it's kind of ambiguous as to is VBAC low risk or is VBAC not low risk, because there's a less than 1% chance of having a rupture rate. I would say that that's low risk. How many zeros have to be after the decimal point before we consider something to be low risk? But it's hard to know because in some states I know that where it says low risk, they do midwives do determine that that allows them to do VBAC, but in other states DC, for example, their birth center law says low risk is excluded, but it doesn't define low risk. But they interpret that to mean that low risk is, that VBAC is not low risk. So it's kind of a matter of interpretation, and for my purposes, what I did, because it was ambiguous, I did make the decision to include the phrase low risk where it was undefined as being prohibiting VBAC. And that was because I just had to make a decision and because I knew it did affect women or providers in offering VBAC or not. Okay, so there's also limitations, again, in this data. Looking at the laws, of course, it doesn't show the true availability of VBAC. And in states that have restrictions, because that was one of the things that I looked at, aside from just prohibition of VBAC, some states have restrictions. And so they may limit it to someone who's had only one C-section or who has only a low transverse incision or who, am I already at 5 minutes? Or who they may require a doctor collaboration or they have to have a doctor consult. And so the availability of those is hard to determine based on looking at the law. Again, it would have to be a more in-detail survey to determine that information. I know anecdotally that those are barriers for women and that it makes it more difficult through my experience in being involved with advocacy in this area. And it often does prohibit women from accessing it. And so what I did was I gave, where it was prohibited, we gave them an F, and where there was restrictions, we gave it a C. And then where it was allowed, they got an A. And then, like I said, we didn't give a score for states that didn't license. Okay, so we had 5 that prohibited, 15 that restricted, 4 that allowed, and then 25 plus DC that do not license them. And I don't have a separate score that shows the or slide that shows the scores because the scores are basically the same from what I just said. They're the same image. An F for the prohibited and yeah. Okay. Am I on 1 minute?
You have 4 minutes.
Oh, okay. Okay, so then I did birth centers. And so determining birth center VBAC access, we kind of did a sort of a hybrid of what we did for the hospitals and for the home birth because there's several factors that affect birth centers. First of all, there is state laws and regulations that can prohibit VBAC, and then there's also the individual, I don't know what happened, that slide got messed up. There's also the individual centers' policies, because some it may be allowed by the state, by the laws, but then the centers will choose to not offer VBAC for whatever reason, whether it's because they're a collaborating physician. A lot of birth centers are run by certified nurse midwives, and in many states they're required to have a physician collaboration. And so if their physician won't allow VBAC, they can't allow VBAC. I did have some women who responded and told me that because their local hospital didn't do VBAC, they didn't offer VBAC because they were worried about transferring a VBAC patient to that that hospital. And then after we looked at the laws and regulations, what we did was we surveyed the hospitals, we surveyed the birth centers, and we took a percentage of those states where it was allowed, and where VBAC is allowed in a birth center, we took the percentage of the birth centers that didn't allow VBAC and gave them a score based on that. There are some states that don't have birth centers at all, and there's so ways that states got Fs was if they don't allow VBAC and if they don't have birth centers, because if they don't have any birth centers, then they not only don't have VBAC available in their birth centers, they don't have it available for anyone. So we surveyed 184 birth centers, 38 offer VBAC, 91 don't offer it either because it's prohibited or they don't offer it, and then I had 54 that actually didn't respond to the survey. So the scoring is, did I say the scoring? States got an F if they prohibited VBAC, and they got an F if they didn't have birth centers, and they got a score based on the percentages of the birth centers. All right, I'm hurrying. Okay, and this is the birth center grades. None of them had an I don't have my totals. I'm sorry. I don't have my totals for some reason on my VBAC, on my birth center grades. So I can't tell you how many of them have Fs, but a lot of them do, as you can see. I just don't know the number to tell you. Okay. So then this is sort of the combined graphics, and there's a lot going on, and it looks sort of crazy, but this is to sort of show you some of the patterns that I saw as I was doing the research. One of the things that you can see is that there is clear clustering of hospitals that do and don't offer VBAC. For this slide, the band and the de facto ban hospitals all are in the same color, and then which is the blue, and then the red is the ones that allow it. And so you can see, like up in the, what's this, the northeast part of the country, you know, there's some clustering there and stuff. And you can also see that out in the Midwest, that states that don't allow VBAC in the hospitals also tend to, you'll see there's a lot of banning hospitals in the Midwestern states, and they're in yellow. They're also the ones that have a lot of restrictions on VBAC. So you can see that there are some patterns in women inability to access VBAC. And so while I didn't really see a clear pattern with birth centers corresponding with hospital policies, like I did say, I did have some midwives who responded to my survey and said that they volunteered it wasn't part of the survey. They just let me know that that the hospital policies did affect their ability to, I'm almost done here, two slides. It did affect their decision to offer VBAC. So this is the final report card. What I did, again, taking a grade, the average grade for all of the three criteria that we did it on, there were 16 states that scored Fs, 20 that made Ds, 14 that had Cs, and then one that had a B. And these are a little bit different from the number that was in the abstract. I'm sure that you all checked and you noticed that. They're a little bit different from what was in the abstract because after the abstract was submitted, I actually was able to survey some additional birth centers, and so it skewed the numbers from the abstract. Okay, and so my recommendations are that clearly the conclusion is that VBAC is not available adequately and that we need to make those changes. So my recommendations are we need to change current laws both for birth centers and for non-nurse midwives. And probably for certified nurse midwives as well, because they have that doctor practice collaboration agreement that can limit them, but that was outside of this research. We need to advocate for hospital policy changes. I think this is really the biggest one. 99% of births happen in hospitals, and changing hospital policies is where we'll have the greatest impact on being able to increase the availability of VBAC. And that will also spill out. It'll trickle down into expanding it for out-of-hospital options. And to do that, we need to educate and encourage providers to offer VBAC. This includes midwives also for out-of-hospital birth that choose not to offer it. And we need more research on increasing access to VBAC. Thank you.